Calvin Keeney et al. Versus New Mexico Department of Game and Fish and New Mexico Game Commission. This is cause number A1CA42310. And could I have appearances, please? For the appellant first. Thank you.
Sorry, Your Honor. Christopher Dodd, Amber Fairberg, and Joseph Goldberg on behalf of the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish. And we're joined at council table by Aaron Wolf on behalf of the State Game Commission.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor, and judges Pete Domenici and Zachary Kim. And we represent Calvin Keeney, Greg Nash, the Romero family, Jennifer Swenson, Cliff Stutter, Chad Yates, and Hugh McKean.
Good morning, everyone. Just so that you all are aware, if you haven't been to this courtroom in a while, we have new audio-video equipment, and our oral argument is being live-streamed. And so whenever somebody speaks into a microphone, the camera will turn to that person. So we'll try not to speak over each other. Otherwise, we have some pretty disruptive video. I also want to see how the appellants intend to split up their time and who will be arguing.
I will be arguing on behalf of the appellants.
Okay.
And I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Great. All right. And then just to be clear for the record, we are here in cause number 42310. That's the nuisance, so the district court's denial of the motion for summary judgment with respect to plaintiff's nuisance claims. So we're not here on the takings issue. I think that's all the preliminary matters. So with that, Mr. Dodd.
Good morning, members of the court. As I stated earlier, my name is Christopher Dodd, and I'll be arguing on behalf of the appellants, the State Game Commission, and the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish. This appeal poses two questions for the court. First, can the government be held responsible for damage to private property by wild elk? And second, can individual landowners bring nuisance claims against the government in order to challenge legislatively mandated regulation? The answer to both of these questions is no. The state's lawful regulation of wild elk is not properly subject to reexamination in a nuisance lawsuit. First, because the law is clear that no one controls wild animals under the doctrine of ferae naturae. And second, because that which is compelled by law cannot amount to a nuisance. Before I move into my argument, I do want to talk about the comprehensive regulatory structure that's involved in New Mexico's regulation of the state's wild elk population. Under Section 17-1-2, the policy of the state of New Mexico is, quote, to provide an adequate and flexible system for the protection of the game and fish of New Mexico and for their use and development for public recreation and food supply and to provide for their propagation, planting, protection, regulation, and conservation to the extent necessary to provide and maintain an adequate supply of game and fish within the state of New Mexico.
Council, I just want to make sure. So that purpose statement that's part of the statute,
yes.
And I may be mistaken, but is it set to be repealed in July? I feel that there's so many ins and outs of the current act. How many eggs should we put in that basket of the purpose statement?
So Judge Ray, it is set to be repealed. And I have to admit that I am not an expert on what the new scheme looks like. My understanding is there's a reformulation of everything. I don't know what the new policy statement is. I was trying to make sense of that in preparing for today's oral argument, but I don't know it particularly well. That being said, it is currently the expressed law of the legislature and is in effect as of today and will be through, I think it's July 1st. And I think that that sets forth the policy of the state as it currently stands and as would apply to all of the plaintiff's claims, which are for past conduct.
My understanding of your argument is that, at least the second part, is that I want to make sure I get it right, that it's compelled, these actions are compelled by law. And if the law is fluctuating and the law is changing to the extent that we're not actually even sure what pieces of the legislature's mandate are going to be in place, how stable is that ground for that argument?
My understanding is that the reworking of the game and fish statutes does not change the purpose that the state has expressed in this section. I can't point the court, unfortunately. I wish I could, but we could submit supplemental briefing if the court would like. I can't point the court to the new statutory section that sets forth policy, but I would be happy to provide that at a later date if the court would like. And I apologize that I'm not prepared to address that issue today.
But you were doing the framework.
Yes. So that's the policy statement set forth by the legislature to protect, propagate, regulate, and conserve the game animals of the state to ensure an adequate supply. And I think it's important to look back in time to the early 1900s and the state of wildlife at that time when these conservation efforts first began. As the state Supreme Court said in State Ex Rel Suffiso v. Heffernan, quote, and this was in 1936, quote, it is now generally recognized that New Mexico's valuable wild animal life would soon be exterminated if the state should fail to conserve it and aid in its reproduction, close quote. And so we have these broad policy statements of the legislature. Then we have the creation of the State Game Commission and the creation of the State Department of Game and Fish. The commission serves as the rulemaking administrative body that conducts rulemaking proceedings, it makes policy decisions, and establishes the specific regulations governing the wildlife of New Mexico. The department then serves as the enforcement agency that implements those policy decisions. Now, recognizing the importance of elk, the legislature declared in section 17-2-2 and 17-2-3 that elk are a protected wildlife species, specifically as a game mammal species, and that the hunting, taking, capturing, killing, or possession of elk shall be regulated by the State Game Commission. The commission is required by law to regulate elk.
Does it make a difference that they're non-native elk? It seems to be a big issue that I saw Mr. Domenici spend some time discussing in his briefing.
That is an issue that the plaintiffs have made a great deal about. It does not matter. The case law is universal, that the state can introduce different species of wild elk or of wild animals that didn't exist in the area before. And it does not make a difference as to later claims that somehow they are subject to control by the state or anything like that. The cases, I think, are absolutely universal on that point. And that would be the Moorman case out of California Court of Appeals, which was tule elk, Mountain States versus Hodel, which was the federal introduction of wild horses and wild burros, and then Utah Native Plant Society, which was the release of mountain goats.
Were those nuisance cases?
They were not nuisance cases. Those were all within the takings arena. However, the principles remain the same.
Well, I wonder, because, so were any of your wildlife exception cases in the nuisance context? I also noticed most of them seem to be in the takings. Do you have authority for using this exception in the nuisance context?
I do not. And I would submit neither do the plaintiffs. And I think that's simply because this kind of issue has not been raised before. Because it's not a viable legal claim. You cannot bring a nuisance claim for the state's regulation of wildlife. That's ultimately our position here. And it's the position that this court should adopt. And I'll get into that in a bit. I want to finish with the regulatory framework. So in order to regulate elk, every 4 years, the commission enacts a comprehensive regulation known as the Elk Rule that establishes the state's elk management goals. The Elk Rule sets population targets for each of the what are called game management units. There are 58 game management units throughout the state, and they set a specific population goal for each of those units. The Elk Rule is adopted after notice, hearing, public comment, a comprehensive rulemaking procedure. And it sets forth for each of the game management units the population target, the number of licenses that are going to be issued to hunt elk in that area. And those licenses aren't just, there'll be 30 of them. They say there'll be 30 of them for bull elk. There'll be 25 for cow elk. There will be X number for archery, X number for center fire rifles. It's a very detailed regulatory scheme.
And sorry, Mr. Dodd.
Yes.
You said that is revisited every 4 years.
Correct.
And what sets that time frame? Is it statutory, internal policy?
That's a good question. I actually don't know off of the top of my head.
Is it mandatory that it's revisited every 4 years?
I would imagine so, but I don't want to misspeak.
Okay.
I could find that for the court if the court would like. I can find that before my rebuttal. So what's important for this court to understand is that the commission, the only way that the state regulates the population of elk is by determining how many elk are going to be hunted, how many elk are going to be killed each year. The commission is not out breeding elk. The commission is simply saying, okay, we'll issue this many licenses because we know hunts that are by this type of weapon are, you know, X percent successful. And so we expect that they're going to kill approximately this number of elk. And that's how the population is ultimately controlled.
But if you're only issuing maybe a few hundred permits, how do you control a population of several thousand elk? And that's just in the Gila area.
So it's, and I can't speak to the intricacies of all of that. The department really has all of that expertise, but there are population models that look at what's the replacement rate for the herd, how quickly are calves being born, how many of those calves are going to mature into adulthood and then breed, and they can make estimations. Ultimately, these are estimations of what is the sustainable harvest level for a given population. And if you allow more tags than that, you're going to have a decreasing population. If you allow fewer tags than that, you'll have an increasing population. And ultimately what the commission does is it sets a target. We want to have more elk in this area, or we want to have fewer elk in this area. And so then they determine, okay, let's issue this number of permits for that year.
And how does the public participation in that process affect the decision by the commission?
So the commission is required to hear input during its public hearings on the elk rule. They conduct a full rulemaking. There's public comment, all of that. Now, I will note, it's in the record in this case that none of the plaintiffs have ever engaged in that process. Not one of them has come to a public comment period and given their piece and said, look, we want fewer elk in the Gila. They haven't done that. They haven't engaged in that process.
Is there an appeals process for permit distribution? I understand there's some sort of lottery for landowner permits. When that lottery happens, is there an opportunity then for someone who doesn't get a permit to appeal the process or to appeal or to again challenge the the number of permits that are being issued or anything like that?
So I know that there is an appeal process for the scoring of a particular property. So the way that the lottery in the landowner in the E-plus system works is it depends on the size of the property and then the score assigned to that property. And the score is assigned based on various features, whether the property has good forage for elk, whether the property has access to water for elk, those sorts of things. If the property scores higher, they have a greater likelihood of success in the draw each year. If the property scores lower, they have less of a chance. That determination can be appealed. There is an appeal process for that determination. I'm not aware of an appeal process that somehow the lottery, I don't know how that would work.
If you don't get a permit, do you have an opportunity to say, well, I didn't get a permit because your measures are all out of whack?
I think that the property owner is allowed to appeal their particular scoring. Okay. I know that they are. That's set forth in the E-plus rule.
How many of these plaintiffs participated in the E-plus program?
Did they?
How many of them? I remember that some did, but I'm not sure that all of them did.
If I recall correctly, all of the plaintiffs have participated in the E-plus program. Plaintiff Keeney was inactivated from the E-plus program because he exercised his depredation assistance rights and actually killed some elk.
So my understanding of the E-plus program is you volunteer for that.
That's correct.
And you, as part of that program, agree to have elk on your property.
That's absolutely correct. And that's the entire purpose. That's why I'm going through this regulatory framework for the court, because it's so important. And actually, let me use that to pivot over to talking about depredation assistance versus E-plus. So those two programs set up different goals. They're different. They're completely separate policies. Depredation assistance is there to assist landowners if they're having issues, if they don't want elk or other game animals on their property that are doing damage. The department, well, it sets forth really two things. One is that the landowner is allowed to kill any game animals that are posing an immediate threat of harm to life or property. And so if they find an elk on their property eating an apple tree, they are permitted to kill it. Then the second component of that statute says, if it isn't an immediate threat, say it's happening at night, you don't see it, that kind of thing, but it's ongoing, the landowner can make a complaint to the department, and the department is required to offer three interventions. And these are they range in sort of what they look like, but they can include things like rubber bullets that the landowners are provided with so that they can shoot the offending animals with non-lethal means to scare them away from their property. They can also be offered fencing materials in some instances. And in fact, in this case, two of the plaintiffs have been offered fencing materials for their properties. Plaintiff Swenson actually took the department up on it and fenced off approximately, I believe, 4 acres of her property. And that's with 8-foot-tall steel mesh fencing, which is effective at keeping out elk.
Although that fencing occurred several years after the fencing materials were supplied.
It did, yes. They sat for quite a while, despite there being an agreement that it has to go up within 6 months. They sat for a couple of years. Plaintiff Keeney has been offered fencing materials at least twice and has rejected fencing materials, says he doesn't want fencing materials. And what he said is he doesn't want his property to, quote, look like a prison.
Now, Mr. Dodd, sorry to pivot on you, but I do have a couple of questions. So Mr. Domenici will get up here and be able to clarify this, but I don't believe that the plaintiffs are alleging that the department, the commission are violating statutes, the regulations, that they're not being enforced pursuant to the letter of those statutes or rules. And so is it the defendant's position that because there's compliance with the statute and the rules, that's a unlimited defense to a nuisance claim?
Yes.
Okay. How do you square that with Los Ranchos 3, which I don't believe states that, necessarily. So I understand that the Department and Commission don't necessarily believe that Los Ranchos 3 applies, but assuming that it does, how do you square up, tell the court how it is that that case applies?
Sure. So the important thing in this case is that the plaintiff's fundamental disagreement with the department is, and the commission, is the policy decision that's been made. There will be X number of elk in the Gila. What makes this case so different from Los Ranchos is that the department and the commission are not operating any kind of physical operation. Right? Los Ranchos governs cases where the government builds a public works project that purportedly gives rise to a public nuisance, that the public work itself creates the nuisance. It doesn't govern where the government is simply regulating and making policy decisions about a natural resource. Right? Those are two different things. The commission and the department haven't built anything. And that's really what Los Ranchos goes to.
But doesn't it go to... It seems like you can pivot a little bit and look at it from a different perspective. Nuisance, by its nature, is grounded in the damage done, not the particular act that caused the damage. So, and we know that the government can be liable in nuisance for damage done. So all Los Ranchos 3 is saying is, sure, if it's permitted, up to a point, the point at which all laws are complied with and the whole thing is permitted, that's a defense. But once we start building the bridge, once we start doing something after that, there might be damage done. And it doesn't matter that it's the government that might cause it or that it was allowed to do that in the first place, but that the damage was done. And so there's a logical fit here. I mean, there's a reason to think that nuisance applies. Why doesn't it?
Because what the plaintiffs complain about in this case is not something that the government has built. They complain about the law itself. So let's think about what ultimately a ruling in this case saying, yes, there can be nuisance here where the government is making regulations. There can be nuisance to complain about the substance of regulation. What that would mean ultimately. So first let's look at what would a trial look like in this case. Right? Ultimately, it would be up to the fact finder to determine, is this regulation reasonable or unreasonable? So we would end up having basically a legislative hearing, a public comment period, where we would have all of the people who are in favor of having a lot of elk in the Gila come in and testify about it is wonderful for hunting opportunities, for economic development, for aesthetic purposes, all of these things. And then on the other side, we would have ranchers and farmers saying, well, it damages our fences, it damages our crops. And the fact finder would be put in this uncomfortable position of ultimately having to decide on policy, right, and weighing those different interests. That's not something that the courts are set up to do. That's not the kind of thing that we look to the courts to do, is set policy. The legislature and the agencies to which it delegates its authority are the bodies that do that. And so ultimately, that's the fundamental distinction with Los Ranchos. In Los Ranchos, they're not complaining that the regulations themselves are a nuisance. They're complaining that the bridge is going to be a nuisance. That's just so fundamentally different than what's presented in this case. Imagine, for example, that the legislature decided to reevaluate the drinking age in New Mexico, and it created a commission, and it said, okay, commission, you figure out what should the appropriate drinking age be in the state, and the commission holds a hearing. It hears from all the different points of view. It hears from young people who say, look, like, I can be sent off to war at 18. I should be able to drink. It hears from scientists who talk about how young brains are not developed until 25 and how alcohol can impede that development. And it hears from Mothers Against Drunk Driving, who wants fewer young people drinking because there's going to be less drunk driving then. And after the conclusion of that hearing, The commission says, that all makes sense. We hear all of that. But we find most persuasive that these young people can be sent off to war to die for their country. They should have the right to drink. And so they lower the drinking age to 18. And Mothers Against Drunk Driving is upset. And so they file suit, and they claim that allowing 18 and 19-year-olds to drink is going to result in a public nuisance on our highways. That kind of lawsuit, just like this one, must fail. It must. Because it would allow all laws, all regulations, to be struck down by the courts or juries who simply disagree with the policy determination that was lawfully and dutifully enacted by the legislative branch.
But what is it about nuisance? I understand looking at it backwards and saying this can't be right because this would be the result. But if you exist in the elements of nuisance and what nuisance is, it really is harm caused by a non-trespassery act, say. Mm-hmm. And we don't care what the act is. We don't care who the actor is a lot of the time. Maybe who the actor is impacts damages and what kind of remedy is available. But what is it about this? Why is it that it isn't a nuisance apart from the ramifications, apart from there's a disconnect with how you view how we challenge government regulations?
I mean, I would say that the separation of powers issue is the core problem in this case for the plaintiffs. But also, I think that the court needs to consider our first argument of fere naturae. Because, Judge Ray, the courts do, in nuisance, require causation. There has to be that the damages are caused by the person to be enjoined. Here, fere naturae cuts off legal causation, right? I think we can all agree the damage that's being wrought to the plaintiff's properties is by wild elk. No one has ever alleged that the department or the commission has gone onto the plaintiff's properties and done anything. And may I have a few moments to finish my
Sure.
No one has ever complained that the department and the commission has gone onto the plaintiff's properties and wrought harm. The only harm that they have complained about is of the elk coming on their property. And what fere naturae does as a doctrine is say, you cannot say then that the department and the commission caused that harm because the elk are an independent intervening cause that stops causation. And so for that doctrine alone defeats the plaintiff's argument in this case. That's all I have unless the court has questions for me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. And Mr. Domenici, you can have an extra minute since Mr. Dodd had an extra minute.
Thank you very much. I'll take all the time I can get. This is a kind of a long, complicated, and important issue. And I appreciate, I'm not sure why you held the argument in Albuquerque, but I appreciate it. It's a little more accommodating for some of my clients. I have several of my clients in the front row, other interested parties behind them, all of whom are, frankly, looking for one thing. Under certain circumstances, shouldn't private property owners be able to have access to the courts when their properties are being regularly, predictably, successively impacted by elk management and operations of these two defendants? Why should we not have access to the courts? That's what a nuisance claim is all about, is saying someone is invading my property. A fact finder has to measure that based on the locality, the circumstances, the justification, the impacts. But what Game and Fish wants is no one ever, under any circumstances, no matter how badly they are impacted, can have access to the courts. That is a fundamental problem, and that is separation of powers. And that is basically giving the executive branch, with some broad legislative oversight, the right to have as many elk as they want, the right to let those elk go on my client's property or someone's property or your property. And the option they give you, just listen to this option. Greg Nash's 84-year-old mother lives in reserve. And this case is all about a courthouse, actually. There's a reserve courthouse herd of elk. Mr. Nash's property, where the elk nurse and live for 4 or 5 months while they calf on private property, 500 elk completely occupying that. That property took a little piece carved out from the Nash property family, and that's the Catron County Courthouse. There is an elk herd in the backyard of the Catron County District Courthouse, of 500 elk living on private property. If Game and Fish owned that, that would be a trophy wildlife reserve. People would go there from all over New Mexico. They are embarrassed about it because they're stealing that property from my client. And then they want to come to you and say, you, Mr. Nash, and your mother cannot come to court. We are going to have more elk in Catron County. We're going to have a larger, greater Gila herd. We are already projected 26,000. Our expert, uncontested, said it's already 30,000. Everyone else is living with drought, not Game and Fish. Everyone else is living with fire. The Gila's had huge fires, not Game and Fish. 30,000 elk. And they are introduced, Judge Baca. They were not native. And it is important.
Why?
It's important because the entire wild animal theory is a theory of proximate cause. It basically says, I can't predict what's going to happen, so I shouldn't be responsible.
Does it make a difference whether it's the Rocky Mountain elk or the Merriam elk that were there before? Don't elk pretty much, aren't they, don't they act the same? Is there something different between the Rocky Mountain elk in terms of their invading private property versus any other elk?
Absolutely. The Merriam elk were a bigger, larger elk. They had natural predators during that entire time period. The Rocky Mountain elk are perfectly set up, basically, to ravage the Gila Wilderness, the Gila National Forest, and which is okay, because those are public lands. But they are also set up to come down into the communities, and they are bred, and the way they live, they will never leave those communities. They are habituated elk.
But don't the property owners have options to prevent the elk from coming onto their property?
Absolutely.
One example being Section 77-16-1, the fence out statute, which reads, every gardener, farmer, planter, or other person having lands or crops that would be injured by trespassing animals shall make, and this is a key word for me, sufficient fence about his land in cultivation or other land that may be so injured, the same to correspond with the requirements of the laws of this state prescribing and defining a legal fence. So there's fence out, and I know the reply is going to be, well, we put up our barbed wire fence. But that doesn't meet sufficient for what you want to fence out. So tell me why the landowners shouldn't have to take care of, you know, this situation by putting up a fence.
Sure. We've defined what a sufficient fence is. So it's not, oh, we put up a barbed wire fence. A barbed wire fence is specified by statute. It's a force.
Yeah, but that goes to cattle and other smaller livestock. But it doesn't go to an elk. We all know that elk destroy those fences.
The intent of that statute clearly was for livestock, the fence out law, because when the legislature put in this, what is an adequate fence, and they didn't say for livestock, an adequate fence is a four-strand barbed wire fence. A elk fence, and I'm sure you're familiar with them, they have them in different places in New Mexico, They're extremely expensive, first of all. They used to put them in, and that's part of our argument. They fenced off 10 miles of this stretch of 15 miles between Aragon and Reserve. Before 2005, they paid for the fencing and the construction, game and fish. So they forced all of those elk onto my client's properties. So with those very expensive fencing. So the expense, and they offer materials now, which are less than half of the cost of an elk fence. That's what they offer, and they only offer it if you're cultivating crops that are harvested mechanically. Only one of my clients is in that situation. So only one of my clients is eligible for fencing materials under their current depredation rules. But I don't want to duck your question. It's a legitimate question. I don't think the statute intends that you fence out mountain lions. I don't think it intends that you fence out elk, frankly. I think that would be a stretch and really an abomination of that statute to say we will have elk fencing hundreds of miles in New Mexico at the expense of the property owner so game and fish can overpropagate. They're supposed to propagate, but they're not supposed to overpropagate, and that's what they've done. But let me just go through my argument a little bit. We do have cases where animals are held, animal owners, operators are held responsible for nuisance. The Feri Naturae in general is applied to insects. There's cases where people are bitten by spiders and the person sues and the property owner says, I'm not responsible for the spider. They're bitten by other poisonous insects. So insects generally are covered. Our two crime nuisance cases both hold the operator responsible for flies. That is an analogy, just like you asked, Judge Ray, that, and of course, the operator of a dairy doesn't walk onto his neighbor's property, just like the game and fish officers don't walk onto my client's property. They create conditions that accumulate flies, dust, odors, and birds. Many times landfills have birds. The adjacent neighbors suffer from those animals, including insects, and a nuisance claim is viable. So there is plenty of precedent. We already have it in New Mexico. Flies, mosquitoes, insects, birds are responsible, are part of a valid nuisance claim. Elk are fit within that. So that to say Feri Naturae should prohibit any claim against what might be covered by that otherwise, because nuisance is different. And Feri Naturae should not apply because it doesn't apply to flies, insects, birds already, and elk are very similar in this case.
Some of these distinctions seem to, and often in nuisance law, the cases are hard to compare because you have to really carefully define what you say the nuisance is, separate the nuisance from the harm that's caused, and carefully define what it is that you're asking to be abated. And in this case, I read your briefing to say that the nuisance is not the elk. The nuisance is the regulations and the enforcement of those regulations. Do you agree with that characterization?
The nuisance is the implementation, decision-making, and operation of game and fish within those regulations.
And not the elk itself. The elk is the harm.
Correct.
Or is the harm the damage to the property?
The harm is the damage to the property. The elk are the instrument, just like a fly. The fly is not the harm. The inconvenience to the homeowner of the fly.
And in that analogy with flies from cows, the cow is the nuisance, the fly is the mechanism, and the bite is the harm.
It's the bite. And
or the annoyance
the bite,
of having flies, yeah.
You know, sometimes it's the bite or others.
But just to...
That's right. And in some ways, it's not even the cow so much. It's the manure, frankly. You know, it's the impacts of those cows. Because if you run it correctly,
right,
you clean up the manure quickly, you don't have the flies. So what the dairymen do, they now have a chemical that kills the flies' larvae in the manure. That's how. So these cases are actually about biology. They're not about policy. They're about fundamental biology. So we hired a biologist. She prepared her expert report. That's our response to summary judgment. They did not contradict one conclusion she made. Her conclusions are not disputed. Her conclusions support every element of the nuisance claim. They filed their reply in order to get a hearing. 3 days later, they didn't dispute, and they haven't. And what we've done, we're approaching the five-year anniversary of my clients, Greg Nash, having, first of all, his mother having to stop gardening because the elk are in her front yard, in her front door. So the remedy for that, respectfully, according to them, she needs to come out with a handgun and kill an elk on her front step. That's what they claim is the depredation assistance. You can kill an elk. How many of you want to kill an elk?
But that does raise a good question. The remedy for nuisance is about abatement.
Correct.
And if the nuisance itself is the enforcement of regulations, you used a specific set of words, and I don't want to mischaracterize your argument, but it was something like implementation. So let's stick with implementation.
Sure.
If implementation of regulations is the nuisance, what abatement are you asking for?
We told Judge Murphy this. It's a very fair question. There's a population management hunt. They're doing one on the Middle Rio Grande because we now have elk in Bosque del Apache. Those elk are dangerous to motorists on I-25, just like these elk are very dangerous to people traveling. They instituted a population management hunt.
Who did?
Game and Fish. It's in their regulations. Yep. They're allowed to do it. They've refused to do it in the Gila. One of the reasons is because what they manage the Gila herd for is trophy elk. That's, when they say propagation, that's not really it. The Gila, her greater herd, is a quality herd, less permits than many other per animal. Of course, it's the largest herd in New Mexico, but less permits per animal because they want trophy elk. So the only thing that gets their attention is trophy elk. That's why they are able to come here and say, Mr. Nash, you only have incidental impact from elk. When you have the Catron County Courthouse herd living on your property, calving every year hundreds of calves, that would only be incidental to someone who only cares about trophy elk. To anyone else, that is massive invasion and interference with enjoyment of your property.
So you're saying the abatement would be population
Absolutely.
Management hunts?
Yeah. Yes.
And is that something achievable through injunctive relief? Would the court have to enjoin existing enforcement or implementation of existing regulations in order for the nuisance to be abated?
No, not at all. That's a regulation that they've refused to use, so they would order them to implement a tool that they have that they are using in other places, but they've chosen to ignore the biology of my clients. Their game warden testified, don't you see the elk when you're driving from Reserve to Aragon? There's several thousand elk live within half a mile of the highway. That's what our biologist says. That's undisputed. The game warden says, I really don't see them. I'm looking for people violating game laws, killing trophy elk. I really don't see those several thousand elk. For 5 years we've had this case, they haven't had a biologist look at one of our clients' properties. We did the biological study, and they've not disputed it. The biology study says these elk will not move out of that valley. They are lazy animals. That's how they survive. They only use energy when they need to. It's not like people might think. When the weather gets cooler or warmer, they're going to go to the high country. These elk are permanent residents in that stretch. They are impacting traffic. That's what our expert says. People down there will not drive at night. It's super dangerous, but it's not I-25. So what we told Judge Murphy we wanted was a court-supervised population management hunt with either a neutral biologist appointed or some third party to review the success of that hunt and say you're not killing enough animal, they're still in there, you're not discouraging them from living, and they're living right by the highway. It is super dangerous. what's going on. And they don't want anyone to go to court over that, ever. People have to be killed. You can't come to court. Your property's useless. You can't come to court. What they're told, David Jones' mother-in-law, she and her husband ran a small farm, cattle operation in Aragon until 2000. They drive down from Albuquerque. They run 25 head of cattle on 200 acres, beautiful land, just like you would see if you're driving anywhere where you come out of the mountains and you go into a beautiful river valley. That's exactly what they had, pristine, the Tularosa River, their 25 head of cattle. Slowly elk start coming in. Those were incidental. And then they invaded. And so they stopped, they couldn't raise cattle. They couldn't keep the cattle inside their fence. So their suggestion, and then her husband died. So she's going down there by herself. Their suggestion is, Mrs. Romero, you're 81 years old. If you don't like elk on your property, kill them. That is offensive in modern day, modern biology, modern psychology, to tell people to enjoy your precious property. You need to go through the trauma of killing elk on that property. It's sort of like you spring opening your cabin. I'm going to go open my cabin. How many elk do I have to kill this year to try to be able to plant my alfalfa? It's offensive. It's completely unrealistic. That's why, with that attitude, all we need is for you to tell them you have carte blanche. Not only can you have that attitude where all you care about is trophy elk in the Gila, but you can't be brought into court to explain yourself.
They have come. Question. I hate to interrupt, but I'm thinking about what Judge Ray talked about, the abatement. And you said, well, let's have a population management hunt. But where would the hunt happen? Would it have to occur only on public lands and not private lands? And if it were to be on private lands, private owned property, would the property owners have to volunteer to participate? How would it be supervised? What if some landowner said, I don't want to participate, and there's 100 head of elk there, so the problem persists. How do you work that all out?
All that, so it's called out in the regs. The regs call for a public and private population management hunts. And they've held these in the Gila. They had such a problem before they had a massive population management hunt. They haven't done it since 2005. A public one is on public land, and they issue licenses. They set targets. They set a season. And they have a lottery or whatever it does, and you have to stay on public land. The private one, and you can do a hybrid too, but the private one, the landowner has to give permission. But if the landowner gives permission, they can give a list of people willing to hunt on their land. Basically, they can have potentially get some benefit out of it, either possibly selling tags or having family members or themselves receive tags. Either one of those is possible. Or you can do a hybrid. And they're not infeasible, Judge Baca. They're meant to fit the problem. So if there's one property that's private and it becomes sort of the oasis, then they will issue, and they don't want to participate. They won't force them to, but these elk have to leave these properties occasionally. And if the public lands around them, that's where the hunters will be. So they don't force anyone to enter those, just so you know. It's completely voluntary, and it can be successfully done. There's public property interspersed all throughout down on that stretch that's really critical. But the private property owners, to a high probability, would participate. These elk are really destroying their usefulness of these properties, their enjoyment of the properties.
And Mr. Domenici, I apologize for interrupting, but I made an assumption and a question with Mr. Dodd, and I want to give you the opportunity to respond. Are the plaintiffs contending that the commissioner department are in any way in their adoption, implementation, enforcement of the regulation statutes, that they violated any statute, any rule, any regulation?
We don't have a specific statute that they violated or regulation.
Okay. So the request is instead that they utilize an underutilized or unutilized regulation with regard to these population management hunts.
That would be one tool, but the concept is what we would propose a district judge have authority. If he wants to use that specific tool or adjust the population management hunt, and then I think a biologist needs to evaluate if that's not being successful, what else is going to work down here. I think the general thought is, unfortunately, the only way you're going to move these elk, because they have everything they need, absolutely everything, forage, water, and cover. That's what they need. To move them out, you're going to have to probably hunt them to a certain level that they will choose not, they will move out and choose not to come back in. And you may have to redo that to move them out. And that's what reasonable game management should do. If you don't do that, you are in fact taking those people's property. You are doing a foreseeable electrojet type taking of their property. If you're saying there's nothing we can do and tough luck, the elk are going to stay there forever.
To center us back in nuisance, do you have any authority that where a nuisance, like a policy-based decision was found to be a nuisance, that an overarching policy has been adopted and that that policy was considered to be a nuisance that had to be abated?
I don't have authority for that. I would just point to the New Mexico Tort Claims Act, which is our sort of immunity law, specifically carved out that the Tort Claims Act does not apply to injunctive relief or mandamus or quo warranto or a handful of equitable type remedies. That's in statute. Mm-hmm. That to me shows our legislature wanted to be sure that our state agencies, who otherwise had kind of a lot of different immunities, would not have immunity from injunction.
So the immunity idea, going back to Los Ranchos 3, there is this notion of quasi-immunity for when things that could be nuisances comply with the law, and it is discussed as a qualified immunity if it's a future nuisance as opposed to a current nuisance. If these policies, because they are the law, comply with the law, and your position is not that the department or the commission is violating the law, how do you apply Los Ranchos to not result in some sort of, not immunity is the wrong word, but as a defense?
The way I would propose that for the district judge, they can raise that as a defense. This is a nuisance in fact trial, and they should be able to raise that as a defense.
But that's the qualified aspect of it in Los Ranchos. The other part that Los Ranchos recognizes is an absolute defense, which, unless there are questions of fact, it would seem would prevent the claim.
It would not prevent the claim for the way they're managing these elk. They're not instituting population management control. They are putting up fencing, which is not by statute or regulation, where they select to put fencing. They made that choice to put 10 miles of fencing on the Tularosa River, forcing all the elk on one end or the other. That was an operational. That's your Los Ranchos operational decision. The other thing they've done, their policy sets forth population statistics. They are at least 15% over their population statistic for the greater Gila herd. Our experts said the herd is 30,000. What they based their hunting on was a herd between 21 and 26,000. They did not dispute our 30,000. They're stuck with that as a on the record.
I understand there's tremendous disputes about the wisdom of the policies and the omissions and the acts, the things that aren't being done. This still is a troubling application of nuisance in a broader context. I mean, it's easy to sink into the specific difficulties that are happening here, but when you go up a couple, 30,000 feet, and you think about the application of nuisance playing out in this way with respect to government regulations, executive implementation of policy, Why isn't that a separation of powers problem?
Because they're making all kinds of management decisions within that umbrella.
And the legislature gave them the authority to do that. What place is there to relitigate the policy in court that's already been done in the agency and that by the authority of the legislature?
Because it's just like Los Ranchos. The operation of the program can be a nuisance.
But in Los Ranchos, we had a pretty clear moment of divide between when policy and when the permitting process, they'd complied with law. That was a moment in time when all the permits were in, right? Then we had the building process and the continued action of the government could harm the property on all sides of the bridge by causing this non-trespassory, I'm not sure what the right word is, but
invasion.
Harm, invasion. And here, the ongoing action by the government is continuing to operate within existing rules and regulations. And it seems different than the building of a bridge, the implementation of a program. Why do you think it's the same?
It is completely, it's very different.
Okay.
Building a bridge is constructing a building or a piece of infrastructure.
That then causes harm physically by the construction.
Right, but if the design is approved, then and you construct it properly, you can't claim a nuisance unless it's operated improperly, is the way I understood that, or maintained or operated improperly, and that's so. I just wanted to make my 3 minutes get them, so I'm out of time answering questions. So there are many discretionary decisions within this policy that this agency has. They have the discretion to institute population management hunts. They have an obligation under the restatement. If there's a nuisance, they have an obligation to abate that. And I think the restatement's very helpful here because the restatement talks about natural conditions being somewhat immunized, but if they're changed, which they have been in this case with fencing, with population, with quality management, and selective use of population management hunts, but now choosing not to do it for 20 years, then those are decisions that fall below the policy, below the regulations. They're into management decisions, which is what Los Ranchos indicated, and a nuisance in fact case can be tried and can become a nuisance, private or public. And I just want to point out that we do have in Ms. Tunberg's expert report, again, which was not challenged, she specifically sets out the elements of the public nuisance that happened here. It's this highway that is on both sides the elk live. My clients generally are on the east side of that, and that's where the river runs. The highway, as you know, in these valleys, it's very frequent the highway runs right next to the river. They're both in the riverbed running parallel, and that's where the elk come. They come down into that bottom. There's everything they need. They just move out a little bit and move in and out. That's what they do. That's what they're habituated.
Let me ask you this because I'm curious with this E-plus participation by your clients. And as I understand it, and I've only learned about this program through the briefing, is that the participants voluntarily participate with the program. And although it's not a compensation program, I think that's been made clear in the record, but they do agree to allow elk to, without, for lack of a better term, reside or live on their property. So on the one hand, your clients are saying, okay, we want to participate in this program. There obviously is some benefit. I guess you participate in a lottery so you can get a landowner permit and maybe be able to sell that for a pretty good amount of money. But on the other hand, and agree that, okay, I'm going to have the elk on my land. But on the other hand, they're saying, but the elk are damaging my property. So I'm wondering, how do those
that's a very fair question. Let me just clarify. So Carmel Romero, who watched the elk come in and watched them put her husband and her out of business, applied for E-plus for 15 years, didn't get anything. 2000, she stopped. 2020, she stopped. So she and her family have not had an application. They haven't given any permission. They have a resident herd, 200 elk, on their property. She's not in E+. Jennifer Swenson, who owns a restaurant and asked for four acres of fencing for the garden for her restaurant, and she didn't put it up because of COVID. So no big deal, I don't think. The department didn't hold her feet to the fire. No one did. It was COVID. She put it up, and the elk have still torn it down. She still does not have a garden for that restaurant, by the way. Her property's been declared ineligible for E+. She applied for it, and they determined it didn't qualify. So she's not in E+. She hasn't given any permission for those elk to come on her property. Zeno has been thrown out of E+. So he's not part of E+. The other ones, the contract they sign says they will allow people to hunt on their property. It does not say they will allow elk on their property. They changed that contract in 2019. The provision that says you will allow elk on your property is not in that contract since 2019. So that is not completely accurate that they've given that up. They do allow hunters on their property, which many of them kind of begrudgingly do that because it's dangerous. These are all properties right on the highway with houses nearby, but they've done that to try to mitigate their harm from these elk. This is all about mitigation and survival is what's going on.
So, Mr. Domenici, we're over.
Yes.
About a minute and a half. There are a couple more questions I want to give Judge Ray the opportunity to ask. I'd ask that our monitors please time this. And Judge Ray.
I just have two real quick questions. Sure. Earlier you talked about that there are so many discretionary decisions that are below the policy level that are made by the agency. Could the legislature control the agency's discretion to make those below policy level decisions?
It would be very hard. We're dealing with elk biology and local.
I mean, not granularly, but could they require depredation? Could they require the kinds of hunts that you're requesting? Could the legislature make clear that the policy includes the kinds of measures or periodic reviews of policy that could account for changing conditions?
Probably, yes. I think the legislature could recognize the impact they have in many ways. The regulations recognize, they define depredation as destroying private property. It's in the regs.
Right.
So the policy and the statutes both recognize there's going to be some impact.
And then my second question was just a clarification with the briefing. It appears that plaintiffs are alleging only intentional conduct and not negligent conduct. You mentioned the restatement, and there are just two slightly different standards for nuisance depending on the kind of conduct. And I read the briefing to only implicate intentional conduct, and I just want to make sure.
No, we would be proposing it to the trial court to consider both of those types.
Both. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
And how much additional time we've got? 2 minutes. Including my minute and a half? Okay, 3.5 minutes. Perfect. Please add that to Mr. Dodd's time. Mr. Dodd.
The defendants do not minimize that elk have real impacts on private landowners. However, the mechanism for addressing these impacts is through policy, not nuisance law. The legislature has charged defendants with balancing the wildlife management and private impacts. And those are policy judgments committed to the political branches.
Plaintiffs are saying that it's below policy level, that implementation, that it's not, that they're not challenging the policies and the underlying large-scale goals of the program so much as implementation below policy level.
I would say that the plaintiffs are saying that simply for strategic purposes in litigation, because really what they're complaining about is the number of elk. That's really what they're complaining about.
They're saying that the department has a number of tools at its disposal that it's not using. I'm sorry, the department and the commission that are not being used.
Yes.
How does an omission play into this analysis, the failure to do something that you have the authority to do?
But Judge Ray, really what you have to understand is the commission is setting a population goal. The department's not using population management hunts because the population is at that goal. That's the issue here. That really, like, they're saying, oh, well, they're not doing these things. Yes, the department is not cutting the population in the Gila because the commission has said this is the population that we want in the Gila.
So the claim that, or the argument that it's overpopulated is not correct based on the information and data that Department of Game and Fish and the Commission have.
That's correct. To the extent that the population exceeds the populations that the Commission chooses, then the Department will issue additional licenses and take action to get the population down, but that has not been what the Department has found. The population of the elk in the Gila is at the approximate. I mean, you don't ever know exactly how many elk you have, but it's within that range that the commission has chosen for the area. And that's ultimately what this case is about. It's a dispute over policy. And that's not the kind of thing for a nuisance claim. That's the kind of thing for public participation, for lobbying lawmakers and policymakers and saying, hey, you guys aren't weighing our interests properly. Right, the commission, like, you need to hear from us.
Is it possible, following up on Judge Ray's question, for the legislature to, I guess, get more in the weeds in terms of saying to the commission and to the Department of Game and Fish, the population level in the Gila Wilderness should not surpass this number?
I think the legislature certainly could, right? The legislature could step in and say, you know what? We've heard from a bunch of people who are upset about how many elk are in the Gila, and we want to set a limit. They could do that. They have not done that. The commission hears from interest groups and landowners, and it considers the economic contributions made by robust hunting opportunities, but it also considers the impact on farmland and harvests, as well as all the other interests that are brought before it. In fact, at one commission meeting, and this is what this court needs to understand, is we have here 7 private landowners in the Gila. There are thousands of private landowners in the Gila. The plaintiffs are only 7 of them. At one commission meeting regarding the elk rule, a Catron County Commissioner came and testified, and he thanked the commission for what it had done for Catron County. He testified that elk hunting had become one of the main economic engines for the county. And the truth is, if you go down to the Gila during hunting season, there is not a single hotel room to be found. Right? The economic contributions that elk have made to this county are enormous. And that's part of the policy decision-making that the commission goes through. Right? The commission has made the Gila a worldwide destination for elk hunting, and that has benefited Catron County in enormous ways. It is for the commission to make those determinations. Okay? They set that policy. They say, this is good policy. We're hearing from everyone. We've weighed the interests, and this is the decision that we're going to make. Again, a process that none of these plaintiffs have ever attempted to be involved in. Not once. They have never really taken up the process that's available to them. They say that we want to keep them out of court. They don't come to our meetings. They don't tell us how this is impacting them.
Is it the department's position, as Mr. Domenici said, that these plaintiffs simply can't come to court on this?
With this case, yes. That is the position of the department and the commission. These are not cognizable claims. Now, I want to go back to Los Ranchos Judge Ray, you focused a lot on Los Ranchos. And I was thinking, as I was sitting listening to Mr. Domenici speak, about how Los Ranchos could have been analogous. Right? How would it be analogous to this case? And really, the only way that Los Ranchos could have been analogous is if, in that case, the villagers had been saying that it was not the bridge that was a nuisance, but the building code that allowed for the bridge that was a nuisance. Or the permit, that's right. That the actual legal act itself was the nuisance. And that's simply not what Los Ranchos did. Los Ranchos looked and said, no, it's the construction of this bridge that could pose the nuisance. And that's just fundamentally different from this case. The only thing that is at issue in this case, when you really get to the heart of it, is how many elk in the Gila? Right? The plaintiffs just told you. What do they want in terms of injunctive relief? They want to kill the elk. They want to reduce the population of elk in the Gila. Respectfully, that is a policy decision that is to be made by the political branches of government. And it's not the kind of thing that should go before a judge or jury for determination. It wouldn't be consistent with our form of representative democracy to have a small group of people then reweigh what the elected officials, what the appointed commissioners have chosen for the state. That's all I have, unless the court has further questions for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your helpful arguments, for your briefing in this case. The court is going to take this matter under advisement. We'll be issuing a written opinion just as soon as we can. And thank you. We're in recess.